Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. The show is brought to you by our generous patrons at patreon.com/falloutlorecast.
Robots Radio presents
the Fallout Lorecast.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, a place for the Fallout community to come together to explore the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. It's that time again, friends. It is Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we are here with the Fallout Lorecast. I'm your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here with my co-host, Lainey, or Neos Pandora. Lainey, how are you doing? Happy Monday.
I'm doing pretty good. Sorry if I sound a little stuffy. I promise I'm not sick. I don't have COVID. I just have allergies.
Yeah, and cat ears. I like your cat ears. They've returned. Awesome. Well, I'm sorry you're having to deal with allergies and, you moved into a room that as we were talking before the show started, hasn't been cleaned in like 300 years. So yeah. It's the oldest room in the United States. But thanks for being here. And as usual, we have a very interesting topic this week. We started out this year talking about some of the lore from Fallout 76, which is the newest game in the Fallout series. And I've been waiting to dive into Fallout 76 because it is kind of one of those newer things. But it's been out for over 2 years now, and they're adding more to it. So it seemed like it was the right time for us to really start talking about some of these topics. And last week we talked about Vault 76's Overseer, because that's the vault you come from in the game. And one of the first groups that you run into, or at least you learn about, even in the original release, before they upgraded the game and added more NPCs and stories and those kinds of things, were the Responders, or at least what seems to be left of the Responders. So that will be our topic for today. And Lainey, of course, as usual, has put together a wonderful presentation on this, and I'll be chiming in as we go. So Lainey, why don't we just go ahead and kick this off?
Alrighty. So I guess we'll start from the beginning. After the Great War, a group called the Responders was founded by four members of what were already, what would you call them? Organizations.
First response workers.
First response workers. So you have like police officers and firefighters and so on. So we have Maria Chavez, Jeff Nakamura, Melody Larkin, and Sanjay Kumar, who started acting in the role as essentially a local government for Appalachia after the bombs dropped. And their job was to provide disaster relief to anyone who had either survived the bombs or was being born now that the bombs had gone off.
Right. And I want to paint the picture a little bit here. Like, we have the most tragic events in the history of the United States and the history of the world happening. You have a nuclear Armageddon, right? That is a terrible, terrible, terrible situation. And we have seen terrible situations in our lifetime, and this last year has been rough. And I just wanted to call this out at the beginning. Thank you to our first responders. Thank you to the people who work in the health services and safety services and those kinds of things, because they genuinely are heroes. And in this situation, it's interesting to me that this was written a number of years ago, because it is a situation where the world needs their help, and this group steps up. And having talked with some of the people behind these games, they spend a lot of time thinking through this. Like, if this were to actually happen and you ended up in a place like Appalachia that didn't get hit nearly as bad as many other locations, what would happen? And I think they're right. I think that the first responders, the people with medical training, the police officers, the firefighters, many of those people are exactly the people that everyone else would be going to for help. And those are the people who would know what to do and how to respond and how to organize. And that's exactly what happened here, is that these different groups came together and they provided aid to the people in need.
Right. They also provided survival training. Anyone could go through the automated system to learn how to survive in the wasteland from what they were learning, which is really awesome. So they basically turned Appalachia into a space where people could keep surviving, and they didn't have to be alone. Unfortunately, not everyone was on the same side as them.
Right, right. And one of the themes I want to point out here is we learned in the last episode about the Overseer from Vault 76, what she discovered about what happened with these groups and the reason why they fell apart. And we're going to get a little bit more into that with this episode, in that not everybody was on the same page. There was a lot of disagreement. There were a lot of people who were working against each other, even though they all had good intentions. They were working against each other. And I think that is the greater tragedy here.
Right, right. And well, in the last one, the Overseer says that that's exactly why she thinks they failed.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. So the responders were essentially the leaders in these post-war restorations, and their efforts were focused in the capital of West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia. And they turned it into a space where anyone could go to get help or request help. And because of that, it was becoming restored in a faster fashion than the rest of the wasteland was at this point, because that's where the people were, you know? Mm-hmm. So they were creating a real community there again. Unfortunately, the demand for aid outweighed what they were able to supply, leading the responders to limit their ability to give aid to anything they could address immediately. So if what they needed to do was something that they didn't have their hands on enough materials, or if they had to go out and go somewhere, like they had to go on some sort of journey, it was out of the cards. They couldn't do it anymore. Unless they could address it right then and there, it was no longer an option.
And we've seen a lot of this kind of decision making happening in just the last year with the things that we've been dealing with. You know, like the people who need help right now are the ones who get it, and it's hard to do any long-term planning or reach out beyond the people who are immediately there in need in the moment. So it is unfortunate they couldn't do as much as they had wanted to.
Right, because they definitely did want to, but they were unable to. This unfortunately led to some survivors being totally neglected. And we see this in the Pleasant Valley ski resort, where there were settlers, or I guess they're not settlers. What else would you call them if they just survived? Other than survivors? Yeah, I was trying to think of like another word. But yeah, there were people there that were trying to make do and couldn't, and decided to kind of, you know, look for someone within their ranks to rally with and like help carry them. And they found David Thorpe, who in the descriptions that I read of him was described as being like stone cold, like just one hell of a guy, you know. Probably not really lovely to like
yeah,
it's probably not really that great to be around.
It's unfortunate that oftentimes the leaders that we flock to are the ones who appear to be good leaders, because they're, you know, they have measured responses, or they look like they're not as stressed by the situation. But oftentimes that means that they're also not as, I don't know, empathetic with the situation as it's going. And yeah, and we'll see where this leads.
So David Thorpe eventually turns the people trying to live in the ski resort into one of the most fearsome raider groups in Appalachia. And so in 2082, the responders took down a different raider group led by a woman named Rosalind Jeffries, who they captured, assuming that they could kind of ransom her with other raiders. An attempt to get peace from the raiders, to make sure that, like, okay, we'll give you her back and you guys won't mess with us and we can do what we want to do and like help people, you know, without the raiders attacking their outposts and such.
Right. It was almost a show of power. Hey, listen, don't mess with us. Let's just agree to stay apart. Like, let's just agree to, like, here's the boundary. We'll make an agreement. You stay over there. We'll stay over here. You don't want to mess with us because we're capable. But let us just do our thing.
But unfortunately, that did not go as planned. And I guess word didn't get out that they didn't actually kill her. They just kind of kidnapped her. And good old David Thorpe was very angry and went after them and decided that the best course of action was to, on Christmas Day, Christmas morning,
right,
to take mini nukes and blow up the Somersville Dam.
Right. So, this is absolutely horrific. Like, to specifically, like, this is the kind of thing the Joker does in order to get back at Batman and Gotham City. You know, like, this is the, you know, like, let's pick a day that is sacred, or, you know, to many people, or just a day that most people associate with happiness 5 years after the most tragic event of their lives, and let's create mass destruction. And it's all because he was still bitter that the responders didn't come help them out.
Right. So he floods them. What happens is they're sitting, beneath, you know, if you're, okay, we all know how water works. It goes down. If you're on a lower level of land than the water is, it will flood.
Yeah, right.
And unfortunately, all of the land that the responders were using flooded.
Right. So, and Charleston, you can see the results of this in the game. Like, you can see the blown up dam. You can see like, there's large swaths of what used to, like, if you come at it from certain angles, it looks like it was a dried up lake bed or something. But that is the result of the flood that was caused by the dam exploding.
Right. And it was really devastating for the responders because it not only destroyed some of their supplies and their homes themselves, but it killed a lot of the responders themselves and their families. So this is regarded as the Christmas flood.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's curious, if you ever hear that in the Fallout community, that's what that means. And it was a really hard time for the responders, but this is not where they ended. They actually ended up thriving after this. It kind of led way to a lot of growth for them. So they, despite suffering through it, ended up resettling at the Morgantown Airport, where they got to expand into the Flatwoods and some areas also around. This was a really good place for them because it was central to the Raiders that they were interacting with and the Brotherhood of Steel at the time while they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Free States, and just, it was a really good central location for them to access people.
Right. And to jump in again, if you play through the story progression, or the original story progression, where you go find the remnants of the responders and you follow them through the quest chain that it takes you on, it actually takes you to many of these locations in order. And you sort of live through, without even really realizing it at the time, you sort of live through the process that they went through in settling and starting in one place and then moving to another. So when you do end up at the Morgantown Airport, surrounded by Scorched and all the other things that are going there, that is that phase of this development in, I guess,
right,
their organization.
Right. So when they get there, it's relatively peaceful and they are able to create like a proper organization. Something that was a problem for them when they first started out was that there was no actual like ranks in their organization. They were all operating underneath like the kinds of ranks and leadership that you would have within their individual organizations. So like firefighters acted like firefighters and police officers acted like police officers, but they're supposed to work together, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that didn't work out. And that caused a lot of problems with like decision making and like who does what. So at this point, now that they're starting fresh, they put Maria Chavez, who was one of the founders, in a leadership position. So she was in charge. And then there are four ranks now underneath. And so the actual organization of the responders is as follows. You have at the top the senior responders. These are the leaders. Maria Chavez is the highest one. These are also typically, of course, the most experienced members. Lots of these people have been there from the beginning.
Right. And probably had leadership roles before the war happened. Had probably, right, you know, experienced, or were more experienced and had, you know, run the organizations that they were originally a part of.
Yeah, a lot of these people are carrying over, I mean, most of them are carrying over jobs that they already had. Although, of course, some of them have joined since, you know, the bomb drop.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get responders who they're fully trained and they're given specialized assignments and they're provided housing. This includes things like the fire breathers, which
Which is a great name. That's so such a good name.
They're pretty cool. We'll talk about them more in a little bit. Also, the Flatwoods Paramedics, which are paramedics, and the Responders Police Force, which had its own... there was like a separate police force that was in Charleston than there was in Morgantown, just because of the tragedy that occurred there. But yeah, so those are the main three kind of sects of the organization. And then below that, you have volunteers, who is anyone who's made it through the automated training. You in the game are going to become a volunteer if you play through that storyline. And then you have volunteer candidates, which is not only anyone actively going through the training, but also anyone who is too young to become a volunteer yet. So maybe they've gone through the training, but they're just not old enough, or if they were like born into it.
They're like junior volunteers. Yeah. They don't have full status until they reach a certain age.
Right. Right. So yeah, so that's what they came up with. And it's much more organized than everyone just trying their best.
Right.
So yeah, so by 2086, they were the strongest they'd ever been. And at this point, they were not only thriving on their own, but they were working alongside the Brotherhood of Steel and the Free States, which is awesome. And they were able to do this because they had a lot of supplies. In this new location, they had access to much more land to farm things. They had access to more people, so they were great to trade with. And of course, the Brotherhood saw that, the Free States saw that.
Yeah, so this is where it ends, right? Like, this is great. Like, everything's going well. They've bounced back from the tragedy of the Christmas flood. And, I mean, just like any of these Fallout stories, it ends up good and happy, right?
Oh, of course not.
of course so... not.
So you see here, it does sound dandy, right? So they have the Brotherhood to help them fight things.
Sounds dandy.
If they wanted to. Everything is great, except there's someone that everyone kind of either didn't know about or forgot about, depending on if we're talking about the player or the people in the game.
Yeah, I think
the Enclave exists.
Yeah, I don't think the Responders had any real sense of who the Enclave was.
Yeah, at this point. I don't think so either.
I don't think they had any idea. And
probably lots of players, if you know, depending on what Fallout games you have or haven't played, you might not know much about the Enclave either.
Right. Yeah.
This is really just like these people the boogeyman came out and caused chaos, essentially. But the Enclave came out of hiding and was like, ha ha, we've been doing some tests. Here's some Scorch Beasts. And then just let them deal with it.
Have some scorched. Enjoy. Yeah.
So this marks the beginning of the Scorched Plague. This is where it all begins.
Right.
From this point prior, there was no Scorched.
Right. Yes. So that's absolutely a wonderful place for us to pause and do the middle of the show and come back and talk about the Scorched. Because anybody who's played Fallout 76 knows about the Scorched Plague. You fight Scorched humans, you fight Scorched beasts, animals that are Scorched, the Scorched Beast Queen. Like, you deal with all of this. This is kind of the main original storyline of the game. And to think that they lived for a number of years without the Scorched Plague, almost 10 years, this is 9 years later, without the Scorched Plague. Right. And then all of a sudden, you know, and things were going pretty well. And then all of a sudden this happens. And that's even more phenomenal to think about it yet in this situation, because there are still raiders. There are still super mutants. There are still mutants in the wasteland terrorizing things. There's still a lot of dangers. There's these groups are working together, but they're not necessarily united. And they're basically holding their own. They're creating environments for people to kind of live and start putting their lives back together 9 years after the Great War. And that's an accomplishment, because we know how most of the world of Fallout goes. Like, things just don't seem to get better. 200 years later, things are still not good, and people are still just trying to eke out a meager existence. And they were doing pretty all right for themselves. And then the Scorch Beast Plague happens. And that's just, I mean, it's very unfortunate, but of course it's a very interesting way to write this in. And if you don't know the history of it, then all you think is, oh, these Scorched Beasts have been here since the bombs dropped. They hadn't, actually. You know, different things happened at different times.
They're not a result of the radiation.
Yeah, they're not a result of the bombs and the radiation. So that's a wonderful place to go into the middle of the show. Why don't we do that?
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
So thank you. Thank you. Thank you to all of our patrons. You guys are our absolute favorite people in the entire universe. You guys are amazing. Thank you for supporting the show. We have three of our tier five patrons that I need to call out and say very special thanks to, because at tier five and tier six, you get called out on every episode of the show. So Amelia R, Justin S, and Matt B, thank you very much. Genuinely, from the bottoms and the tops of our hearts, from our completed heart-shaped mass in the middles of our chests that move blood around, thank you for supporting us, and for everyone else who is supporting us, thank you for that. If you are interested in helping to make sure that we can keep doing this show and bringing you this kind of content, then please check out patreon.com/falloutlorecast, where you can find that, you know, if you even sign up on the first tier, you get ad-free episodes. And then if you sign up for other tiers, you get other stuff like discounts from the store, the extended versions of the episodes that, you know, after we ended the normal episode, we'll continue talking with chat and stuff like that. There's all sorts of fun stuff you can get there, along with the ability to join us at the end of every month and join our patron chat, which is always a wonderful time and such a good group of people. So go check that out. There's lots of good stuff. Also, Lainey, we're like hanging out in the upper 400s per month at this point. We are very, 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 very close to getting to 500. And we've surpassed that like a month and then dropped back below. Surpassed it and then dropped back below. If we can get to 500 and stay there for 2 months, I'm going to say at least 2 months, then we've hit that goal for me, the requirement of 500 for a few months, which means that I have to go out and get my Fallout tattoo. And that was something I put on the Patreon back when I started it as kind of this like pie in the sky. Yeah, maybe someday we'll get to $500. That'll never happen, but it'd be cool. You know, I can get a tattoo. I'll probably put something on my shoulder, maybe like the logo for the show, or like a Scorch Beast or something, or, you know, Death Claw. I don't know. We'll come up with it. You guys can help me decide what that is. But if we get there and we stay there for a few months, that's what I'm going to have to go get done. So if you want to help me out with that, go check out patreon.com/falloutlorecast. And thank you again to all of our patrons. You guys are amazing. Are you interested in starting a podcast, but you don't know how to get started? Are you concerned that your podcast just isn't reaching the audience that you're trying to reach? Well, this is Robots from the Robots Radio Network, and I have a podcast for you. It is the Podcast Creator's Guide. You can check it out here at robotsradio.net on any podcatcher and listen every week for quick tips and updates for how to get you started and growing your podcast even faster. Check it out today. The Podcaster's Creator's Guide.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
So we are back, and this is the second half of the show, and the Scorch Beasts are back too, or at least here now. Maybe not back. They didn't really go anywhere initially. They're now here. So what's the deal with the Scorch Plague, and what's going on with the responders?
So, well, it came out of nowhere, and nobody knew what it was. At this point, they don't know it's a plague. There really is no information. There are scorched beasts, and now there are things that are turning up that are scorched. There are people that are scorched. There are creatures that are scorched. What are they? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. And they're not just ghouls. I mean, they look kind of ghoulish, no. But they're different. They're
really, they think. They have their own kind of community. They're so strange.
Yeah, it's clearly something that's like affecting more than just level, humans. There's more going on.
On a physical level, they are burning from the inside out. But that doesn't even touch the way it affects their minds. This is a whole other beast. and it's a plague, so anyone can get it.
Yeah, we'll have to dig into this more in a future episode, because this is a whole episode by itself for sure.
So in response, the responders, you know, that's what they do. They respond to things. Mm-hmm. They create a group.
They're not pre-responders. They're responders.
they're not psychic. they create a group called the Fire Breathers that are dedicated to training elite fighters in order to defend settlers from the Scorched as well as other wasteland
Fire Breathers.
Creatures.
It's such a good name.
It's super people, they're military trained. These are members of the military that work for the responders that are training their elite fighters to get the Scorched, which are, they don't even know what they are. They're just getting them. They're doing their best. It's the whole story is just like, and then they did their best.
Yeah.
And then they tried again and they did their best. Like, right. It's like, what are they even doing? So the Brotherhood of Steel, I don't know if it's because maybe they had more insight onto what the Enclave was doing. I don't know if it's just because they figured it out sooner. But they attempt to warn Maria Chavez of the Scorched and how dangerous it actually is and the way that it might actually be affecting things. You know, nobody really knows what's going on or how to fix it. But the Brotherhood has some insight and tries to share it. Mm-hmm. And Maria decides that she wants none of it because she thinks that the Brotherhood is just like big old military. It's just going to go fight everything. It doesn't care about the people. And she cares about the people. And she thinks that if she attacks us on her own, she'll come to a better conclusion.
Right.
So she's
right.
too stubborn to accept her advice and just totally disregards it.
Which is very tragic because this is another place where the groups could have been working together. We did. Right. This was one of the topics that I did an episode on months ago, was the Brotherhood in Appalachia and Taggarty's Thunder, the development of the Brotherhood, the support from Maxon. There was a lot that they were already doing and accomplishing in the Wastelands. So their advice on this would have been very useful to have followed. Because mm-hmm. while the responders were responding to their needs in their part of Appalachia and maintaining the livelihood of the people there, the Brotherhood were a trained military force. They were ex-military who were now restructured around this new ideology and had many accomplished and been fighting a lot of these dangers before the responders even became aware of them.
So this was a bit troublesome, not only because it was a dumb choice on her part, but also because at this point they're allies and she decided that suddenly the responders just aren't listening anymore. And it's unfortunate because their alliance had been very strong, right? They were all thriving mm-hmm. right before this happened. And it's almost like just like that, it just fizzled. It was just over because they stopped communicating, which is just, it's the worst. Anything would have been better.
It's like it's like a bad TV show where like the the protagonist just doesn't tell somebody else something and you're just like, just talk to them, just right? communicate. I hate when that is like lack of communication is the reason for the ramp up to the climax of whatever the story happens to be. Like, it's just like, that's the easiest thing to solve. Just talk, you know, like right. it's better for there to be like some physical thing that keeps you apart. Okay. That makes sense. But like, you just aren't telling them, come on, stop. Yeah. Yeah.
So Maria takes the responders on a different route. She decides that they're going to do some of their own research, try to get to the bottom of things. So she decides to work with a local scientist, Amy Carey. And Amy has, Amy's not a part of the responders. She, in fact, very distinctly chooses to work outside of them. Mm-hmm. But she decides to aid them. So she's attempting to learn more about the Scorched, what they are, what they're doing, and how to get rid of them, of course, right? And it's through research with her and some other scientists that they eventually do find out that it is a plague.
Right.
And so this project with Amy is supposed to be a secret, except in 2095, somebody leaked it to the Brotherhood, who showed up with the responders, and at this point they are not friends, showed up, put the responders at gunpoint, and asked Maria what she was working on. Mm-hmm. And of course, because everyone is stubborn and dumb now, they just don't tell them.
Stubborn and dumb now.
So that's just great.
Yeah, but and, I mean that this makes sense though. I mean, this is what the Brotherhood does, is they see right. themselves as the like saviors of the Wasteland, and if there is technology or science, then they need to be the ones who are in control of it because they don't trust anyone else to be. And we've seen how that becomes divisive in the Wasteland in other Fallout stories. Like, this is kind of a running theme. And when they're at their best, they tend to be more sharing and more considerate of other people. And of course, that does put them in their own, you know, danger sometimes. But when they're at their worst, they are, you know, completely isolationist and doubt anybody else even has the ability to do the right thing in the situation. And of course, that creates friction.
So yeah, so of course, you know, Brotherhood shows up, puts them at gunpoint, they don't share anything. And this is also a tragic decision because the Brotherhood then kind of pitters out. They fall to the wasteland. And
yeah, they go listen to that episode. We won't go into it here, but go listen to the episode. It's again another very tragic situation.
Yeah, so it's they're gone, and the responders are really the only other group that's attempting to keep people safe in the wasteland and make it easier to adjust to the world like this and kind of get rid of the creatures that are around. So they're alone now, and they do not have allies because they've cut everyone off. And between between the Scorch Beast attacks that they're starting to get from the Scorch Beasts, which are big old, for anyone who hasn't played 76, can we describe the Scorch Beasts? They're like dragons.
They're dragons. They basically took the code for dragons from Skyrim and crammed it into Fallout is what they did.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, they're giant bats. They're giant mutated bats is what they are. And they have this like sonar attack that they shoot at you, these big rings of like, I don't know, sound, but they're visualized, and they can swoop and poop at you is what I call it. They drop that that, I don't know, that mist, like the radiated mist, as they like come down and swoop on you. They're big baddies, and until you reach high enough level and you've kind of maxed out your character, you've got some good weapons, you've got some good armor and things, they're a constant threat because especially in certain parts of the map, you're more likely to run into them, and you'll hear them. You'll see them flying around in the distance, and they'll come down and fight with whoever's below them. They don't care. They just kind of, they're like the dragons in Skyrim. Yeah, swoop and poop. That's what they do.
Swooping and pooping. Yeah. All right. So I have to keep dealing with sushi. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It's worth it.
So.
So, okay. So, between the Scorch Beasts and the Raiders attacking various outposts, attacking the responders in general, both at their base and wherever else they've spread to, because at this point, I mean, they were doing really well. They spread all over the place. things get really tough because there's no one else helping. They're the helpers. And when the helpers are the ones being attacked, what are they supposed to do? You know? But they had a little bit of hope because they were still working on their science projects, right? They have a better idea of what the Scorched are at this point. They've seen the spread of things.
Science projects. And they've got their trifold thing set up. Somebody has a little volcano on the side. And then somebody else is like, that's not even an experiment. It's just a project. Yeah.
Some kid accidentally invents a time machine. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, science projects. Mm-hmm. They thought they could produce a cure for the Scorched Plague, which they might have been able to, right? In the game, you are able to inoculate people eventually in one of the quest lines.
Had they been given a little bit more time and a little bit more support, they were very close. Right. Yeah.
But because they didn't listen to the Brotherhood in the very beginning, they're too late. And so by the point that they would have gotten it through, not only were they being attacked so much from all of the things in the wasteland? Everything's out to fight you, including the people, right? It's a dangerous, dangerous world. But also, it was interfering with their communication with other outposts. And so the research wasn't only happening in one spot, right? They had people from the outside helping, and they couldn't contact these people anymore because different outposts were going down. They sent out the fire breathers in an attempt to kind of stop the Scorch, kind of close them into different areas, you know, make it a little bit easier, buy a little bit more time to get this cure out, and all hell breaks loose.
It was kind of a last-ditch effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fire breathers certainly were not enough. And all of the responders died. Like, that was it. Which is, it's rough. But if you spend any amount of time in 76, you can see that truly, unless you're a beefcake, you can't survive as a normal person in the wasteland. Like, it won't happen.
Like Fabio?
So
that's like an old, Fabio, that's an old pull. Fabio was like the guy that was on all the fronts of the romance novels back in like the 90s.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wasn't alive.
No, you weren't.
Oops. I said oops as if I had a choice. Oops. But yeah, so the Scorched are dangerous, the wasteland is dangerous, the responders could not handle it, and out they went.
But that's not the end of the story.
No.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more. I mean, so all of their stuff is... Well, not all of it. Obviously, we had a flood from the dam, and we had whatever else has happened since then.
Sure.
But a lot of things are left behind. And if you play the game, you can go and see them, and you can go through the automated training. You can become a volunteer, and you can learn more about the Scorched and things like that. But it appears that not all is lost, and that you, as a player character, may not be the only one kind of looking into all of this. Mm-hmm. So in 2102 that's the year the responders 100% they were gone. But in 2103, a settler named Heather Ellis.
Well, I think 2102 is when you leave the vault. They've already been gone by then.
Okay.
So by then they had been completely eradicated.
Oh yeah. By 2102.
Right.
Sorry.
It's okay. So a year later. This coincides with Wastelanders coming out, which every year in the real world is actually a year in the game as well. So mm-hmm. the game launched, it was 2102. Your player character leaves Vault 76. A year goes by, the events of Wastelanders happens, and people start moving back to Appalachia. And that's when the settler shows up, Heather Ellis.
Right. And she comes across, I think, in the Flatwoods, what's left of the responders. And, mm-hmm. Right? It's in the Flatwoods. I think of playing the game.
Yep. And you can meet her. If you go do this now, if you're a new player and you go to Flatwoods and you find that responders location that was in Flatwoods is actually in an old church, you will run across Heather Ellis, who is there.
Doesn't she have a dog?
Yeah, she has a dog too. She's got a good boy. She's got a good boy
with her. Oh yeah. Yep. So you can also go through the automated training, right? And so Heather does this as well. And by the time that you meet her, I think she's stuck on the path to become a fire breather, mm-hmm. which you can also do in the game, which is fun. Anyone who hasn't played this yet, I think I said this last time too, but like it's really fun to get to go through all these stories. I saw a meme today about Vault 76. It was like someone laughing at all the walking simulator games on the PlayStation Store, and then like realizing that Vault 76 was a walking simulator.
I mean, it's not, but I guess you could play it like that. Yeah, right. I mean, by that logic, any RPG is a walking simulator if you just walk from one mission to the next.
Yeah, definitely much more so original launch Fallout 76. Yeah, but even then, you're still finding things. It was never a walking simulator, but it's pretty funny.
Right. So let's get back to this concept, because I think there's some really interesting stuff here. We have a group. Let me sum this up. Right. We have a group of people who started out as first responders who rise to the occasion and heroically do a lot of things right. Even though they make some bad decisions along the way, they do a lot of things right. And even in the end, they give their lives in order to defend the ability to do the research to try to solve this plague. And they make a lot of good decisions. They organize, they create a structure, they train people, they have a a actual unified response. They try to make things work out among different groups in the wasteland. They devote attention to science where it's needed. They use the skills of the people who are in the group and the education and the talents of the people in the group in order to try to do what they do best in order to make this all work out. And in the end, they all give their lives in order to see if they can save everyone. And they can't. And we're left by 2103 with just the remnants of what they had created, but also kind of a playbook for what they did, what they succeeded at, how to finish the cure, and also how to learn from the things that they did wrong. And here we have a single settler, Heather Ellis, who discovers this along with you and is now committed to forming the new responders, to following in that path. And it makes me wonder if there's a future for this. Is this a story that will continue to develop as new DLC comes out for the game, as new stories come out for the game? We're at a point now in the game where we have Wastelanders. We have the Raider group and we have the Settler group. We have the Brotherhood of Steel showing back up. We might have, there's rumor that maybe we're going to get more Enclave stuff coming. And I've speculated about that on the Fallout Hub show with Ken and Dave. And that, by the way, that most recent episode will come out very, very soon. We took kind of a break over the holidays, but that's coming back. So go look up the Fallout Hub if you want more Fallout 76 stuff. But this could be the beginning of the new responders. What if after this next expansion comes out, we find that she has now rebuilt parts of the responders and has started recruiting again, or is working, has followed the path and is now working and communicating with the Brotherhood of Steel, or becomes part of the Brotherhood? Like, this could go many different directions. I think that this is cool because there are groups in the Wasteland who are generally not just for themselves. And I think the responders are the epitome of that. They are doing what they can for the betterment of humanity as a whole with very little thought for themselves first. And that is heroic and it is noble. And it's unfortunate that things didn't work out for them. But like I said, it does kind of create a template for what that could be in the future. And in the Fallout universe, that's kind of a rare thing, right? Like, so many of the groups in the wastelands, the different places that we've been in the different games, are mostly out for themselves. Even the NCR has a lot of their own concerns at hand and feel overwhelmed at times dealing with all the other issues. And the responders aren't any different in feeling overwhelmed by all these issues, but they were first and foremost responders. They were first and foremost paramedics and medical people and police officers and firefighters who have been trained to try to put other people's needs first. And I think that that is a really interesting and different kind of perspective than we get in many of the other Fallout games. So it's actually very, very cool. Yeah. Reagan Legan. I hope I say Legan right. Like you would want me to read that. 21 in chat says the responders are what the Brotherhood thinks they are. Potentially. Yeah. The Brotherhood could learn a lot from them. They could learn a lot from the Brotherhood when it comes to organization and structure.
They could have.
Yeah, they could have. They could have. But we're getting new people coming back to the Wastelands. So I think we're going to see more developments of things. I think the stories are going to continue. And I'm excited to see where it goes. So Lainey's just nodding her head. She's like, yep, yep.
I agree.
You said lots of words and I have nothing else to say because you already used them all up.
What do I do now?
So so exciting stuff. So I guess that wraps up our responder section. Thank you for putting that together, Lainey. And
yeah.
The big news around the world of Fallout 76 right now is that the PTS has the recent updates on it. So you should go check that out if you're interested in downloading the PTS, the test server, in order to see the changes to, there's a lot of UI changes, especially for the Pip-Boy and, quality of life improvements for the game. And there was just an announcement today I saw on Twitter that I believe they're planning to push those all out to the actual game on the 26th of this month, January. So very, very soon, just a few weeks away, we should have those improvements, which I'm excited about. And they teased that that's just the beginning. There's a bunch more. So awesome. Awesome. Keep working on those improvements. Keep working on story. Keep working on stuff. The game has been developing very, very well. It still crashes for me when I stream it sometimes. So please don't crash it. But then again, maybe that's OBS. I don't know. It could be OBS's fault for all I know. So I don't know. But I'm excited for where it's going. Lainey, do you have anything to talk about or share before we head out?
I've been streaming. I'm always streaming though. So that's not new. I did mention last time, but it was after we had finished, that part of what I'm doing in my stream, an extra project that we've added on, is that my roommate Corey and I are starting a YouTube channel. So on my stream, we stream games together that maybe have been... a common theme is that there are at least games that one of us hasn't played before, if not both, mm-hmm. And probably are known for issues they've had with either not being too polished or leaning too heavily into tropes, games, things like this.
Games with problems.
games with problems.
Basically your stream.
And what we're doing with them is we're playing them together all the way through and then getting to the end and making a video essay about what they did and what they could have done better. Mm-hmm. What's my channel name and what do I do?
There it is.
And I do lots of things. I stream. What all do I stream?
You stream Fallout. That one says, you stream. Yeah. You stream some mainline games, right? Like you stream Fallout. Right.
So I do Fallout. I do Elder Scrolls. I do Dark Souls. I do. What else? Other ones. Those are like the big three.
Right.
I do those the most.
You change it up like almost every day.
Yeah, so I stream almost daily, and I do a little bit of everything. I explore indie games, so we just did one, we started one called Stealth Inc., which is fun. It's a little puzzle game, and then we do other ones too. I play some Apex Legends if you're into, like, FPS games.
Shooting fools.
I do a little bit of anything.
Taking names.
Shooting fools.
Yeah.
I always name those, what is it when you flip them?
When you flip them?
Oh.
I don't know.
Names and taking ass.
Oh, where you flip the words. Yeah. I gotcha.
That's what I usually name those streams.
I've been influenced. I'm now saying fools because of this mechanist. Oh, we should talk about this. The mechanist, have you seen this? On Twitter, there's an account for... Yeah, for the mechanist, which I should do an episode on. That would be a fun episode. Although we're doing 76 stuff. Okay, so if anybody doesn't know, the mechanist is one of the characters that shows up in Fallout and Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, and people dress up as him because he's one of the superhero slash villains. I don't know which he is all the time. It seems to be a little bit of both. There was an expansion called Automaton for Fallout 4, which is based around building robots and stuff, and the antagonist for that one is the mechanist or... a person dressed up as the mechanist. And somebody's created a Twitter account where they've started role-playing as him, I guess. Nobody seems to know who this is, but they're now challenging. They're doing ridiculous things like these voice clips where they're talking about saving the wasteland and yelling at their robots. And then more recently have been challenging basically everybody and everybody to rap duels, which is absolutely hilarious. So if you haven't checked this out, go check it out. I've shared some of the stuff on my account, but this is one of the best things I've seen in the Fallout community Twitter in a while now.
It's pretty funny.
It's pretty great. other things of note, Ken from Chat of Fallout 76 podcast has built a BioShock building, a BioShock camp.
Ooh.
And it looks really, really cool. You should go check that out. He's got pictures. So if you're not following Chad of Fallout 76 podcast Twitter as well, go check that out. It looks really, really cool. I wonder if there's anything else going on in the community. This community is awesome. You guys are great.
Awesome.
I love all the stuff you guys share and all the fun things. So go check that stuff out. It's hilarious. All right. I think that's it. What do I have going on? I've got my regular streams. I've been streaming. I'm committing now to streaming every day during the day. So generally in the late morning, sometime after about 10:30, I will be streaming live while I work and edit podcasts and do all sorts of things. And I would love for you guys to come by and be like my work friends who can just kind of hang out and chat with me while I'm at work. Friends. It's awesome. So it's cute. Awesome. We've been having a lot of fun. A lot of people in chat right now have come by during the day. And it's great. It, you know, it gives me somebody to talk to and we have a good time and they can ask questions or we just talk about whatever. And then after I get done with my work, usually I'll stream a game in the afternoons. And again, lots of fun, good times. And thank you, those of you who have been joining me. I really do appreciate hanging out with you guys. You guys are awesome.
I need to come hang out with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you should come by or go hang out. They should go check you out if you're streaming during the day. So.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes I'm live while you're live.
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes we're live at the same time. Yeah. Then we have to fight. It's a battle. We should have a rap battle. Really, can you rap?
Between our channels.
Can you rap?
Can I rap?
I've never rapped. Can you rap? We could try to have a rap battle.
I can like... okay. Can we do, wait.
Maybe we should, instead of rap, because we're not rappers, maybe we should do a poem battle. Maybe we should do a haiku battle.
A haiku battle?
Yeah, haiku battle.
What is this? Hobbit?
A hop? What? No, a haiku. You do a haiku. You make a haiku.
No,
and you send it to the other person.
Get my joke.
And
oh, no.
A hobbit? What?
I said, what is this? The Hobbit?
Because of the riddles? The riddle battle? It's not a riddle battle. It's a haiku battle. But it has to be like a rap battle where you have to like put the other person down and talk about how awesome you are, but only in the span of a haiku.
Oh, man. I could do it. I could do it. Maybe not.
Well, we'll have to see. All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode of the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will be hanging out to chat with you guys for a bit after the show. And if you're interested in getting that, then make sure you subscribe on the Patreon. And Lainey's holding up her little vault guy. Thumbs up. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Talk to you later. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Also, look up the Robots Radio YouTube for videos about Fallout and other things. And check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/robotsradio.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Have you ever wondered how deep the Elder Scrolls lore rabbit hole goes? Have you got a grasp of the basics and want to find out more about the universe? Written in Uncertainty is here to help you. We'll be mixing in philosophy, theology, and whatever other theory is useful with Elder Scrolls texts to untangle some of the biggest questions in the series, like what are Dragonbreaks, how does Chim work, where did the Dwemer go, and more. Check us out at writteninuncertainty.com or find Written in Uncertainty on any podcatcher. Thanks for listening, and catch you later in the Grey Maybe of Tamriel.
In a world where solid-state electronics and vacuum tubes are still meta, people never stop loving atomic-powered everything. A chosen 500 stepped inside a subterranean vault to be spared the nuclear horror of the inevitable Great War. 25 years later, they emerge after the fallout settles to retake Appalachia. Among them, two former rivals whose blood feud will tear West Virginia apart and their epic struggle for survival. Chad, a vault bro who has a strength of 15, an intelligence of 2, and is a complete wasteland dickhead. Simon, a complicated anti-hero who chooses light and hope, but accidentally becomes a cannibal, and wakes up naked and afraid with a Scorch Beast Queen after a date goes terribly wrong. What? I mean, it's a wild wasteland, right? This dark humor radio drama will have you driving off the road and crawling out from under the fallout. Two men. One wasteland. And so many nukes. Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast, rated R, now streaming on your holotape player podcasty thing.